can you ever be quite comfortable when nothing is predictable?
Yeah, I think we have a guy like that at our office.
Wow.
Just do what you do, player.
All right, this is a very special honor for us to have Tony Plush, Morgan, whatever. How many people are in there?
Oh, man, there's a bunch of us, man. I just call them my better halves.
I have them finishing third just because I like them.
Just because I like them.
There's absolutely, positively no logic whatsoever to having them finish third. And I look forward to hearing why you guys don't think so.
You don't need logic, all right?
The hitters, they're going to be without Ichiro Suzuki stinking up the lineup.
And on top of that, I said, you know, Nomi-san was on the mound. I thought I don't like him, so, you know, go ahead and let his run score, too.
One of their big off-season additions was Tomoya Yagi, which should tell you where I'm putting the dragon dish.
That's part two of the Yamai explanation.
I mean,
thank you for bringing some comedy to the show, Jason.
Ando calls me into the office and with the other players, and I said, look, man, I'm struggling. If you want to get rid of me, go ahead. I'm being honest. I'm struggling.
American way, yeah.
It's tough over here, you know.
Especially here in Japan, the way these catchers are, I mean, sometimes they make you feel like you never played baseball before.
They haven't had Narusei, and they haven't had Arakaki and Tateyama.
Wait, time out. When did you start this side gig as a comedian?
You know, we knew the rules, we knew what we had to do, and, you know, it was nice we were able to beat Mexico twice that day. Beat them in the game and beat them in the fight.
I think their biggest addition is the slugging rookie who they drafted, Kazuma Okamoto, and he looks like he's really going to be good when he grows up.
Well, like you said, it's too soon. I'm not ready to overtake 2 years of evidence with 3 weeks of evidence.
And I've seen pictures of Kuriyama with his hands on his face, like, what's going on? What's happening here? Like, it's close to being desperate.
With me for the fifth year of JBW is Jim Allen. How's it going, buddy? Happy New Year.
Fifth year? I just met you, it seems.
What's your name again? Hi, and welcome to the 200th episode of Japan Baseball Weekly. It's for October 19th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me, as usual, in cyberspace is my buddy Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy? Congratulations on our making it to 200 shows.
Yeah, well, it required a lot of teamwork. And I say teamwork, you know, everybody's got to do their job. And
you do yours.
I do mine, which means I sit here and I listen to what John says and thinks every week, and then I comment.
You've done your homework. You've done your homework, and I've appreciated it, man.
I've done it twice, man. 200 shows, two times. That's very efficient.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining us. We will get to the Japan Series matchup, which is going to be the Tokyo Yakult Swallows and the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks. But firstly, I want to thank the Sports Bar Shooters in Nagoya, our initial sponsor, and One World Sports, our current sponsor, who has been backing us for 3 seasons now. So we appreciate them very much.
Speaking of Shooters, is that free drink offer if we're in Nagoya still good?
I'm sure if you tell Chris, I'm sure it's still good, but he's got to be there. The owner's still got to be there.
All right. And I got to be there.
Now, I also want to take some time to point out the huge contributions that we had early on from Michael Westbay and getting the show on iTunes. And he works each week to get the show up and available to everyone. So a special thanks to you, Michael. And in fact, we have a special unsolicited message from him. So let's take a listen to that.
Hey there, John and Jim. Congratulations on 200 episodes. I've really enjoyed tuning in weekly for the past 5 years to get your take on what's been happening in Pro Yaku. I must confess, though, my favorite parts of the show have been when Jim goes off on a tangent, often extending the show into extra innings. I feel I'm getting more for my money. Well, I'm looking forward to the next 200 episodes, hopefully with more guest contributors and roundtable discussions. Take care.
Oh, I'm touched.
Thank you very much, Michael. Yeah, I'm touched as well. Thank you very much, man. Appreciate it. But roundtable discussions, that's very ambitious.
Yeah, well, we've done it before, but it's like being a baseball season, so many things seem to get in the way every week, yeah. Like baseball, travel schedules and whatnot.
So. Or jobs or family, yeah. Or whatever, but it's a good idea and we'll try to do that. And again, we just owe so much to you, and I know you're the unsung hero of the show because we don't mention you every week, although I make it a point to try to.
I thought the unsung heroes played in Seoul or something.
But All right. But in that opening montage, I want to go through that really quickly. We had guests in order of appearance, and I'm assuming you guys will recognize our voices, my voice and Jim's voice. So we had Niger Morgan, we had Michael Westbay, Matt Merton, Jason Koskry, Randy Bass, Alex Ramirez, Patrick Newman, Scott Matheson, Josh Whitesell, talking about the change in the baseballs there. Mm-hmm. Claudio Rodriguez in Toronto, and Jim and yours truly. And obviously, we would like to spend a lot more time talking about our 200th episode, but I just do want to go through some stats and some highlights because, of course, this is a baseball show. We gotta have stats.
What's my OPS, baby?
I don't know what your OPS is, but this is not the 200th show for you or me personally.
Right. So that's what I meant. It's a team effort. We didn't get here by ourselves. One person can't do it alone.
Right. So by my count, and this is unofficial, but I think Michael Westbay sat in for you about 6 times over the first 3 years. And right. Then Patrick Newman, the NPB tracker, he sat in for you twice.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Koskry sat in for you once this year, and I did a show alone, so I think you're at show number 190. And for me, I missed one show when I was in the States for the holidays at the end of year number one, and right. I wasn't planning to do a show, and you called Michael and got him to sit in for me. Actually, on the show, we talked about the fact that I have had a family situation going on there. But I wasn't planning to do a show. You guys did one, and the thing I remember about that show is poor Michael, for an hour and 14 minutes, didn't really say that much on the show. He didn't really have a chance.
Hashtag high heat.
So what else is new? You wanted extra. You want extra innings? You get extra innings, baby.
All right. I asked for JVW memories at Stuart_Miller18. He sent in a note, and he said, you guys should include some of your Yuki Saito ribbings. #high heat. Which we could have done. I couldn't find them. I was looking, but I couldn't find them. We did have the great computer crash of 2014, in which I lost the entire first season of shows. So I no longer have the data for those. But they're actually floating out there somewhere, and I'm sure Michael Westbay has some of them. But yeah, they're gone. So. Anyway,
well, if anybody wants to send in theirs and share them, those old ones, we'd be happy to.
Well, we can listen to them. I just don't have the data. Yeah,
I don't have it.
All right. Claudio in Toronto, he made the effort on the homepage to mention that he loved the fact that I had the man crush on Yoshio Itoi. He thought that was.
And Tadahito Iguchi. How come we forgot about that?
Iguchi, I just thought he was a great looking guy.
That was before the show.
Yeah, I just thought he was a great looking guy, though. I didn't.
Okay.
He wasn't my favorite player like Itoi was. Okay. All right. He also he remembered the show on which Jim, you explained that Randy Messenger said when asked if his daughter knew about his foul language, he said, "Are you kidding me? I come from a family of truckers. Of course she knows I speak like this." And then Claudio said one of his favorite shows was the almost live coverage after Vladimir Valentin broke the NPB single season home run record. That show was taped at Jingu Stadium.
In the dugout.
Jason Koskry sat in for us for part of that show too, so he really loved that. More stats. Matt Merton, Tony Barnett are the guys who have made the most appearances on the shows. I think at least 5.
Wow.
For each guy, including we're going to talk to Tony later on the show, on this week's show, so that'd be good. The longest show was an hour and 23 minutes, and that was this year. An hour and 23 minutes. Why did the producer let it go that long?
Well, because there's no such thing. There's no capital punishment in podcast land.
Okay. No capital punishment. Okay. And there was another show that was actually that was this year, and then another show in year 3, mm-hmm. show number 6 with Larry Rocha, the former front office guy with the Lotte Marines, that show was 123.
That was the one where we had to split Larry Rocha in two.
That's correct. Now the shortest show was year one, and it was show number four, and that was 20 minutes. Can you imagine? There were three shows in the 20-minute range, but there was one that was exactly 20 minutes in that first year. I got to go back and listen to that one. How did I turn you off?
Hashtag high heat.
Come on, you can abuse me more than that. I mean, you're just warming up. That's
not at all.
That was probably the one where I wasn't there 20 minutes.
No, I doubt it. The one that you weren't there, the one I did alone was 40 minutes. Our most popular show, according to Michael Westbay and his stats, and I haven't gotten anything recently, but it has long been the most popular show, is the show on which Robert Whiting was a guest.
Mm.
And our most memorable show was one that you brought up to me, and it was also lost in the great PC crash of 2014. That was the MVP debate show. On which we decided to discuss what we thought the MVP meant to us and how we come about making our choices for MVP.
The procedure or the methodology, yeah.
Whatever it was pretty popular, but we have hence never spoken word one about MVPs and how we arrive at selecting
them. That's right. Well, we had after we finished wrestling on Skype, and removed the broken furniture.
Cyber furniture, as it were. All right, so enough about us. We want to get to the show. Again, thank you very much for listening each week, and we hope you go back and enjoy some of the old shows just for kicks, because it is kind of funny to click back. Actually, the sound has really improved, I think, from the first three moves, and we owe that to Michael, another Michael. We actually called him Mike, and he used to send in a lot of questions, and he suggested we get some quality mics, and we did that. And I actually talked to
Kozo. Until mine broke.
until you broke yours, don't just say that. Anyway, we won't get into the details. Kozo Ota has helped us also with some of the sound and getting that together, and also Michael Westbay again suggested a software that I could download and that would help with the mixing part. So we've had a lot of help, and we appreciate it, and hopefully we will continue to grow and get more help from all of you guys, and we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
indeed. All right, so let's get on with the show. We're going to talk about the CLCS and PLCS, and we got chats with Tony Barnett and Scott Matheson, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so in the first stage of the CLCS, the Giants took out the Tigers. That was what I predicted. I forgot what you predicted, but I'm assuming you picked the Tigers because I can't imagine. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I think you did pick the Giants, and it was a 3-1 score on Monday. That was way back on October 12th. It seems like years ago.
It's a few hours after the last podcast went out. So.
Yeah, and Shinosuke Abe came through with a sacrifice fly in the first inning and had an RBI single, and that was the start of a real hot streak for him. And Aaron Pareda, he pitched really well, went 6-plus innings. He left after a leadoff home run that he gave up to Kosuke Fukudome in the 7th inning, but he was awesome. And in fact, I don't remember a time when the Giants had two imports pitching in the top three of their rotation in the postseason.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And those guys did really well, Aaron Pareda and Miles Michaelis. And, they got through that series, which we expected. The Tigers got that second game and just couldn't come up. I mean, in that last game in the 9th inning, they came up, they put the tying runs on. They brought up their best run producers in Maru Gomez and Matt Merton, and those two guys made the final outs of their season. So they couldn't ask for anything more.
Well, they were scoreless for a long time there, and then they fixed that by bringing you Minoru Iwata to the mound, which meant they were going to score one run.
Mm-hmm.
They did. And job accomplished, mission accomplished, baby. Here's your run. Enjoy it.
Here's your run. Go home. Don't come back. And so the Giants get through and they head off to the final stage, and we'll discuss that later. And then in the PLCS, The fighters, actually, you know, when you think about it, their playoff lives could have ended in less than 24 hours because they were trailing in game two, which was a day game after a night game. But they somehow rallied in that day game and came back and forced the third game. And then they just kind of didn't show up for that game. They lost 2-1 in the finale. I thought Hideki Kuriyama, the manager, as much as he absolutely loathed losing, this series loss is on him more than it was on anybody else. And the reason I wrote that and made a note of that when I was watching that game is because Shohei Ohtani had the bad game one start. And in this inning, they put runners on first and third in the eighth inning of this game, game three, with one out. Mm-hmm. And I just wouldn't have brought Ohtani in at that time. First of all, he struck out a lot. He struck out 43 times in 119 plate appearances.
Well,
this season.
He's a very good hitter, but he's got a hit.
Yeah, exactly. That was my other point that I was going to make is only 14 plate appearances since August 1st. Why are you bringing this guy in a situation where you have to get the bat on the ball to get a run in? If you know, why is he up there? I just kept thinking, why is he up there? Why is he up there? You must really want to lose. And he struck out, which was totally predictable. Mm-hmm. And they end up going home. And the other thing is he sent out the rookie Kyohei Arihara
mm-hmm.
for another inning because he was pitching well. And I know that the rookie Hakumura had not pitched well the day before. In fact, he looked like he basically wet his pants out there on the mound. But
that's mean.
It is. But, I mean, he wasn't very effective, and he didn't look good. And Arihara at least looked more poised. But, man, he threw a high fastball to Despaña, Alfredo Despaña, and he cracked it over the center field wall. I mean, what did you expect again? I just thought Kuriyama just mismanaged or managed his way right out of the playoffs there.
Well, I didn't get a good look at that game, so I can't really say too much about it other than Wakui 143 pitches. You know, what else would we expect? He dodged bullets, which he does when he does all the time, except when he's really good. And home runs by Tadahito Iguchi and Alfredo Despain, and that was it. And the fighters were done. And as soon as their last breath, they said, "We want Kuriyama to come back."
Yeah, good luck with that. No, I actually don't think he's a bad manager, but in this respect, I just think he
had a bad game.
Not that Ito managed better than he did, because I didn't think either one of them were great. But he didn't make the moves that I think were right in front of him that he could have made, and it cost him. You know, in a close game, which we've seen in the major leagues, you can't do too many stupid things and actually survive. And he did a couple, and no, they didn't get out of it. So they're gone. They're home for the winter, which happens. So then we got the matchup of the Giants versus the Swallows and the Marines versus the Hawks in the final stages of their respective league series. And game one for the Giants at Jingu Stadium. I don't know what you guys are calling it. I guess our paper is officially calling it a six-game series with a one-game advantage.
I think that's accurate. It is a six-game series.
It's not wrong.
No, there are six games. There are six games with seven potential wins.
I don't want to get into it. It's just madness. It's absolute madness. I'm calling it a seven-game series because you need to win. You need to have four wins to get through. So the Giants went to Jingu on Wednesday night, and you know they pulled it off. They set themselves up in a good position by sending out. They dusted off Tetsuya Utsumi and got him through four. 0.2 innings, I think it was. Decent innings. He pitched in and out of trouble, got the bases loaded for Coco Ballantyne, and Coco hits into a double play, and then five relievers come in to wrap up this thing, and they get away with a 4-1 victory.
Yeah.
So I thought they had stolen one. I thought they had pulled a real Houdini at that point, and that they maybe had gotten into the Swallows' psyche and said, you know, if you're going to beat us, you're really going to have to beat us, guys.
Well, I'll tell you, I had a chance to talk to Tetsuya Utsumi 2 days later.
You found him on
Friday. I
did. Friday.
Well, it seems the Giants pitchers, usually in Japan, the starting pitchers run and stretch, play a little catch the day after they start, and then they have the following day off. But it's like the Giants pitchers did that backwards. They disappeared the day after their start, and they came back and ran and stretched 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Utsumi was at Jingu, and I did have a chance to talk with him. And he said he'd been hurt all year.
I think we kind of knew.
Okay. And he said he didn't feel healthy until his start in the Giants' last game on October 4th against the Swallows, which he won. Or I think he pitched five innings. I don't remember if he won or not. But that was the first time he said he felt healthy, like he could actually pitch mm-hmm. without pain. And in the start of the Climax series, when he was warming up on the sidelines, he said he was so nervous when he lifted his leg up to play catch, his right leg. It was shaking. It was so scared. He didn't want to go to the mound.
A case of the quivers, huh?
Yeah, it was really bad. And he said, and then, you know, he just lucked out of that inning getting Valentin to hit into a double play with the base, one out and the bases loaded. He said after that, everything was okay. But he was really upfront about it. It's great. He's always a great person to talk to. So anyway, the day after, and when I saw John at Jingu Stadium, before I saw John at Jingu Stadium, I was sitting there, I was listening to Mitsuru Monaco, the Swallows manager, and they've just lost a game, and you know, they're not a powerhouse, they're not big favorites in this series, and you know, the series is now even at 1-1 because the Swallows got their free win. And he's like, it's in the bank. He's laughing with the reporters. He's having a good time. He's talking about his golf game. It's just, he doesn't have a care in the world, and everybody is just loose and relaxed. So that was and I was thinking, if this were the Giants at 1-1, Haro would be there with a couple of stiff smiles, a couple of highs, a couple of waves, now back to business.
That guy, Monaka, I tell you, they've really found a jewel because he's cool. He's mm-hmm. a cool customer. You see him in the dugouts. Other guys are pacing or look nervous or get angry. This nothing rattles him. You know, he's always doing whatever he usually does, whether it's smiling or it's talking to one of his coaches. Something good happens, something bad happens. You can barely tell.
Yeah, he doesn't lose his cool. He looks calm and like he's paying attention to what's going on.
Man, I really like. I said at the beginning of this whole thing that when I saw him in the dugout, I really like his demeanor in the dugout. And you know, after they clinched and his little interview, his the on field mm-hmm. interview after they clinched, going through this the Climax series, just cool as a cucumber. And he's joking around saying congratulations to the fans. He said, I really didn't prepare any statement for this moment, but that's the only thing I could think of, or that's what came out. So anyway, you know, we hope we were going to want to go to the Japan series, and we hope we can win it and blah blah blah. But he's just cool. I just like him. He's really good.
I asked Vladimir Valentin about that. I said, this is really nice, you know. And he says, well, what do you expect him? You know, we can't do nothing about losing yesterday. He says, you want him to hang his head? And I said, I don't want him to hang his head. I said, I was impressed. He says, well, you know, he's got to show that he's got confidence in his guys. He trusts us.
Right, right. So as Jim mentioned, we saw each other at Jingu, and this was on Thursday afternoon, and I had quick chats with Yakult closer Tony Barnett and Yomiuri reliever Scott Matheson. So let's take a listen to that. You'll first hear Tony, and then a quick break, and then you'll hear me talking to Scott Matheson.
All right, dude. You guys are playing with this one-win advantage in this playoff system for the first time. How's it feel when you actually have the advantage?
Well, I mean, going into last night, it's, you know, great, but obviously now that's erased. You know, we lost the first game, so, you know, that's kind of erased. But, you know, it's a good feeling, mostly just because we're playing at home. You know, the comforts of your own home, and, you know, is what it is. You know, obviously in retrospect, it's nice to have. You wish the playoff system was a little bit different, a little bit more, you know, even Steven to begin with. But, you know, it's nice. You know, obviously, you know, it's a reward for having the season we did and, you know, ending up on top.
All right, now you guys basically played this team a bunch of times in the regular season. You know them, they know you. So when you go into a season like a series like this, what's your approach?
The approach is, you don't change anything. I know, for the most part, you look at my stats this year, I faced Abe, Kamai, and Takahashi more than anybody else in their lineup. So more than likely, I'm going to face those same guys again. They know me, I know them. And at this point, it just kind of comes down to that chess game is, they know where my strengths are, I know where their strengths are. They're going to try to adjust to their weaknesses, and I'm going to try to adjust to mine as well. So it's just that game of, it's a chess game, man. Who strikes first, who ends up on top. It's baseball. That's the beautiful thing is when you see guys like this so often, it's so common for you just to be looking back at them, and them looking right back at you. You've done it so many times that you know that if you make this one certain mistake, they're probably going to punish you, and same with the, vice versa, so it's, the atmosphere is great in Jingu. The playoffs are always a good atmosphere, so it's fun.
All right, now how do you feel about the lack of playoff experience on the Swallows?
Well, every single year it seems like we're a fairly young squad. Even back in 2011, 2012, we got some, a lot of us had some experience, coming from them and just remembering. But once again, you're not facing anybody new. When we go into Tokyo Dome, when we go into Tokyo Dome, it's always a playoff atmosphere in that place. It's always loud. It's always, intense, So it's really nothing new. It's just this time, we're at our home place and the stands are packed with a lot more Swallows fans.
And do you kind of pay attention to what's going on in the other league, or do you just totally put your focus on what you guys are doing?
I mean, you know, there's certain TVs, they'll get the games on and stuff. So, I'll give it a peek, see where it's at. But, I'm not, dissecting it by any means right now. You're just worrying about, the task at hand, which is the team that you got to play that night. So, you'll just give the TV a peek, see what's going on, see who's up. What inning it is, stuff like that. But, it's nothing that I'm sitting down actually really watching.
All right, so what do you guys focus on? You focus on game-by-game stuff in this series, or do you just try to focus on getting the win no matter how you can do it?
Obviously, by all means necessary. When it comes to winning the game, do what you got to do to end up on top that night.
That includes you throwing more than one inning?
Oh, absolutely. It's, at the end of the day, there's no saving arms. You got to do what you got to do to win that night and worry about tomorrow, when the sun rises. But once again, especially in a series like this, it comes down pitch by pitch, play by play. You got to worry about that stuff before you start worrying about the future, and you're going to end up on a plane home quicker than you think.
Okay. All right, buddy. Good luck.
Hey, thanks, man.
What has it been like, because this team didn't win the pennant for the first time in a while, and you guys are playing on the road now in this series? What's the difference between this series and the past three?
I think last year we had the long break and we got swept in the climax series, where this year we kept playing and, we've had to battle all year, where the last 2 years, we knew we were the best and we maybe took it for granted, where this year, we have to work a little bit harder, but, I think everybody, myself included on the team, feels like the Swallows are still underdogs and, especially after winning, series is tied 1-1 now, we won the first game, I think everybody's pretty confident. We still have all our best pitchers to come, and I think that it'll only make us stronger if we move on from here.
I was thinking that it might be a weakness for you guys, that you had to burn up your best pitchers at the top of the rotation to get through to this stage. But then now the way it sets up after winning game one, you guys are going to be in good position at the back end of this series.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yesterday was a very important game, and we won it. And by winning that yesterday, it sets us up pretty nicely. So, I think we're in a pretty good seat. And, I think also this year our pitchers pitched in meaningful games before this and, never got a chance to cool down and are still game form and season form, where, maybe the Swallows, didn't play for 2 weeks, and it's a lot harder to, pick it right back up.
Now, this franchise is all about championships and winning pennants and stuff. What was the atmosphere when you guys realized you weren't going to win the pennant this year? What was it like in the locker room? What was it like amongst with the coaches and everyone?
Disappointment. I mean, definitely disappointment. I think, we have the best players in the league, and, we should have been first place. We had a down year, and you know, I think everybody on our team, our only goal is to win, and, you know, we still came second place, and we're still in the league championship right now, but, you know, the ultimate goal is to win and be first place, and the Giants and Yamiri is, you know, they're all about winning, so... you know, I think it was a disappointment for us this year, but, you know, now it's time to redeem ourselves and, you know, hopefully move on to the Japan series and win from there.
All right. Now, what's the biggest factor in a series like this in which maybe we don't expect complete games from the starting pitchers, you know, and you got to play, they're scheduled 6 games in a row. You know, you're going out to face the same guy that you faced before throughout the season. So what's the approach when you come into a series like this?
I mean, I don't think it's any different. You know, we faced these guys, you know, 30 games before this or whatever it was. And
plus the preseason.
Plus the preseason. And, you know, you just play the same teams over and over. So, you know, they have a pretty good idea of how we throw. And I feel like we have a pretty good idea how they hit. And, you know, it's just, at this point, talent and whoever, you know, performs the best wins. So it's the same game plan and really just going after them. And, you know, I don't think you ever expect your starters to go complete games, but, you know, I think you expect them still to go, you know, especially come out with their top guys to go deeper in the games. And, you know, as a bullpen, just be ready every day. And, you know, we were told before the series, get ready to pitch, you know, 9 straight games here in the climax. So that's what I'm trying to prepare to do.
All right, man. Good luck. Thanks a lot. Appreciate
your
time, man.
Sounds good.
All right, guys, thanks a lot for taking the time out. I know that actually Scott was in the middle of, you know, he's got to manage working out and doing the workouts with the team and then getting on that little bus to get over to the stadium. So, you know, he yanked me aside and said, hey, let's go. We got a couple minutes. Let's go. And he was really
always
nice to do that.
Always gracious.
And then Tony is always accommodating, and we really appreciate his comments. The only thing I can say is Scott Matheson being Scott Matheson, and as you heard in that opening montage again, he was the one who said, hey, we beat Mexico twice that day. We beat him on the field in the game, and we beat him in the fight. And you might remember they had this huge fight in the WBC, Mexico and
because
Canada.
Because of the butt.
Canada was trying to get extra runs because you needed to score as many runs as possible, and that was the way the rules worked. But anyway... confident as ever, you know, they won that first game, and like I had said, their rotation, this is the thing about the Swallows that I'm going to get into later on, is that they had to go through the best pitcher. You know, they lost to arguably the pitcher they probably should have beaten in the series, and then they beat the three pitchers they could have lost to in Michaelis and Pareda and Sugano. So they were pretty much set up, and he said as much, you know, we're in good position, and then they just couldn't come through with the bats, and they really struggled, as we'll get into, but they really struggled. On Tony's side, you know, he said, hey, look, whatever it takes to win, we're going to try to do it, and they basically did, but I thought they could have done more in terms of strategizing, but I think the way their lineups plays and the way their lineup is set up, I don't think they have a lot of plays that they can put on. I mean, Kawabata got on a lot, but he's not a guy with a lot of speed, so they're not going to actually put him in motion a lot. And obviously, he's hitting in front of Yamada, who's terrorizing people, so they don't want him at second because they want the base filled so that they actually have to pitch to Yamada, so it doesn't really behoove them to put on a play. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of the lineup, the bottom part of the lineup, didn't really produce much, but we're not expecting them to produce much, especially against those pitchers. I actually look for them to produce in the Japan series, but we'll get to that. So, your thoughts on the chats?
Well, thanks again, guys. Tony, I know I've been talking to you, probably you're tired of talking to me pretty much the last couple of weeks, but, you know, nobody thinks that advantage is fair. But everybody who has it is happy they've got it. So I'm sort of like, get over it. You know, it took me a while to get used to it. But I think the funny, and I've mentioned that people in the States talk about this now. Maybe we need an advantage too, because, you know, when you see the wild card teams going to the World Series, they think, maybe it should be more valuable. Okay, I think that's a valid, interesting thought. Things don't have to be the way they are in the States. So that was one thing I was thinking about. But yeah, his attitude and Scott's was, you know, we've done this before. It's another game that we have to take extremely seriously. And what Scott said, you know, we feel they're the underdogs and we still have our best pitchers, no doubt about that. But we have the best players. Well, You know, you should think so. You should think everybody who goes on the field should think that they're the best and they're the ones who are going to win and they're going to do what it takes to win, because otherwise, why play? But I don't think the Giants have the best players anymore. I think they did 3 years ago. I think right now their offense is really lame.
I think their
offense has been lame for a couple of years. I don't know why. Their pitching's their defense is really good. I'll tell you, the Giants' defense became really good this year.
Well, I think their results in the Central League tell us where they are in terms of as a team, and I think they're right in the middle. I think I picked them to finish third. I can't remember. I had the card. Well, I picked them to finish third, and that's where they were.
I picked them to finish a little lower than that.
Didn't you have them like last?
Last. I did. Last. Giants fans, last. Well.
All right. Well, on to game two. On to game two. Ryan Yasuhiro Ryan Ogawa. He threw his best game of the season. It was just perfect timing for that. 8 shutout innings. He had a wobbly start the first 2 innings, and I remember watching the news and I heard the adjustment that he made, but he made some kind of adjustment, and Coco Ballantyne had 2 hits. He knocked in a couple runs, came on a bases loaded single on a hanging breaking ball that he knocked back up the middle, and the Triple Crown Trio, I think is what I'm going to call him. The Triple Crown Trio. Say that 3 times fast. Kawabata.
I can't say it once.
Kawabata, Yamada, and Hatakeyama. That trio came up, you know, to set up the runs, and I think that's what the Swallows envisioned before the series started, was that those 3 guys were going to really come through to help produce a lot of runs, and Ballantyne was going to contribute, and that's what they got in that game, and they won 4-0. Mm-hmm. It was really good pitching on their part, that and pretty good defense too, but the pitching really came through for them that night, and they got enough runs.
Well, I think the Giants here, yeah, the pitching was good, and the Giants hitting, their situational hitting was just abysmal. It was abysmal in the first stage until Abe woke up in game 3. It was abysmal in the second stage. They had a stretch where they were, I'm going to say 3-4, about 0-12 with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, they were pathetic.
Okay, so the thing about that game was, you know, there was some poor fielding, which they are a good fielding team, but they didn't have a good fielding day that day, and that was about it. And then Ogawa pitches great, and Miles Michaelis had a fairly good game, but it just wasn't enough.
Right. And, you know, I talked about it. I'll get to it here because we're going to talk about game 3, but I talked about it in the prediction show that the Giants are willing to put guys in any defensive spot. And I said it's a weakness, and I believe it was Michael Westbay who said maybe it's a strength, and, you know, it's good that they can use these guys in different areas. But I really think it cost them in this series, because Abe looked like a fish out of water at first base. Not that he wasn't fielding well. He did the fielding part all right. He just made poor decisions with throws. He didn't execute, you know. It seemed like he didn't actually have a plan in mind a couple of times. One that he threw behind a runner and let the runner score, instead of actually moving his feet, running at the guy and forcing him back to the base. And it was just, you know, basic stuff, but it was bad. And they I don't know how in game 4 they only came away with 1 error.
there was some discussion about that in the press box, you know.
Yeah, there was some soccer going on out there. They were kicking it pretty good.
That was dribbling. It was dribbling. The ball was bouncing.
All right. So in game 3, the Swallows win that one 2-0. And they shut out the Giants for the 2nd consecutive game. Now, this was Shohei Tateyama, the guy who's coming off triple Tommy John situations, and he was locked in with what he is as a pitcher right now, which is stay off the corners, maybe go over the plate with something really soft on occasion, or don't try to overthrow anything, and then, again, work these corners, work away, away, away. And he was really good with his stuff, and he hit his spots, and he just gutted through 6 innings, and it's scoreless innings, and then the bullpen took over.
Bullpen was really solid. I mean, Tateyama had 1 really dangerous inning when he couldn't throw strikes, and that was but he's, you know, since he's come back, he used to not walk guys, but this year he's walked quite a lot, and he just got around it. He didn't give him anything to hit, and the Giants obliged by not hitting.
Yeah, they didn't.
They went after his stuff that they couldn't hit.
Yeah, they got guys on again. They didn't get too many on in scoring position, but they just came up empty, and they didn't get a lot of hits. They finished with 5 hits on the night, so...
And then they gave runs away.
And they deserved. And then again, the defense was, huh? What are you doing here? and yet, no errors on the official scoreboard up there. But again, the bullpen was really good for the Swallows. I think when we had that question early on in the season, and I ranked their bullpen as probably, if not number 2, number 1. I don't remember, to be honest. I think I want to say it was number 1, but. But I was thinking SoftBank was pretty good as well.
I think SoftBank, you can't go wrong.
Can't go wrong with those guys. But, yeah, they did really well. Tony Barnett had some trouble in the ninth with a single and a walk. But he pitched out of that. I think he put the leadoff runners on and then had a single by Sakamoto. And then he walked Abe, who was hitting .750 at the time, so that's really actually not a bad move.
Yeah.
I remember when we talked to him earlier this year, and he said his comment was, "Who do I want to challenge tonight? Who do I feel like, I want to challenge?" And I don't think Abe was the guy. And then he got Chono. He worked Chono pretty good and got him to hit into his second double play of that night, and then got a strikeout of Yoshinobu Takahashi as a pinch hitter. So it was a really good, really emotional save. He was doing the Tony dance out there on the mound, and it was really fun. It was a good game to watch.
I have to mention, I made a mistake. I was thinking of Ogawa, who had his one trouble in the second. It was Tateyama had his trouble in the first inning. So just
okay,
my mistake there.
Yeah,
okay,
first inning. All right, so... and then our buddy, our base-running blunder boy, Soichiro Tateoko, I think in 3 games, he made 3 base-running mistakes, or at least he made outs on the bases 3 times. And I'm thinking, Hada wants to put him out there because he's good at getting on base, but what's the difference if you make the out at home plate or second base or third base, even when he was made the last out of an inning? A cardinal sin, right, in baseball, where we're making the last out at third base. He's trying to stretch a double into a triple with 2 outs. I don't get this guy. Is somebody going to, are we going to send him to some kind of tutoring school? In Japan, they like to have cram schools. Maybe they should send him to base running cram school in the winter. What do you think?
I think they're going to get a new manager. Oh, excuse me. They're going to get a new manager, and they'll make some changes, yeah.
Well, what do you mean? They're going to make some changes with his brain?
No, I think that they'll address the issue.
Okay. Stop running into outs, Yasiel. Puig. All right. Game 4 was a 3-2, and that was a series clincher. 3-2 win for the Swallows.
Yep.
And again, poor defense by the Giants. And this one came in the first inning.
Poor. You'd be sued by the poor if you call that defense poor. Say, man, don't even put us in the same boat with those oafs.
And again, they're forced to start, and I love the guy, Hirokazu Ibata. I love him, but I just don't see how you can start him in a playoff game at second
now
base. But a better second baseman makes that catch.
Yeah, Katoka gets it.
Yeah,
Katoka gets that ball. And so it spilled out of his glove. That was a hit. I mean, that was a hit.
Was definitely a hit, but it should have been an out.
But of course, but the problem was there were other ones. There were other hits that should have been errors. It should have been out. So that was the problem with the Giants. They just gave away runs.
And they didn't get their own. And they had a one time first, I'm sorry, what was it? First and third with 1 out. And they had another situation where the bases were loaded with 1 out. And they just couldn't score.
Runner on third base with 1 out. You name it.
Couldn't score. Michael Westbay sends me an email. He says, they have this phrase in Japanese about home base being so far away.
Yeah.
And he says, is it really that far? And I said, no, it's not that it's far. It's that they don't know where it is.
It's not that. It's the hitters. They just couldn't get it. They couldn't get it done. They had runners. It was like, Abe had the big hit. He had the 2-run single, and that was essentially it for the offense.
And Shuichi Murata, who usually, since he's been with the Giants, has really been a good third baseman defensively, and he just looked awful. He was shaky. He was dropping balls.
He had a couple of bad ones, and then
he was out of practice because he hasn't been playing much.
True. Well, his bat's certainly out of practice. So.
It hasn't seen much action, huh?
No.
So the Giants go down, and then we get the announcement, which you mentioned or you touched on just a moment ago, which was that Tatsunori Hara, the manager, has decided that he wants no more. I think he wants a break, but he wants to step down.
Yeah.
And he's
He looked tired at the end of the day. He did look tired. That was my impression. I don't know whether he was or not. He just looked like he really strives to win almost, you know, he's so passionate about it. It's, I think it kind of takes his toll when he, no matter what he's doing, the team just ain't getting any better.
Yeah. And he mentioned that, and you know, I'm sure there's a lot of pressure to win, and you're right. He looked half tired and half relieved that he didn't have to suffer anymore. And he had that look in his eye that, you know, man, you know, I've had a long run here, and I just think he needs a break. To me, because he's a good manager, and he obviously understands how to win and how to motivate guys and get them into positions to win. And I think he'll be back at some point in some place. And I actually saw on TV today that the Bay Stars are interested in having him come over there and manage. But I mean, it's just rumor, and I think somebody just threw it out there. But it makes sense. I think on the show that they mentioned that he's from Kanagawa or has some link to Kanagawa.
Well, he went to high school down there.
And so that he'd be going back home. So something to keep an eye on. That's interesting. So
yeah, speaking of Hara, you know, when he left the Giants in 2003, the first time, and in 2005, before the 2005 season, or I think at the autumn of 2004, after Rakuten was approved as the new expansion franchise, Marty Kunert, who was briefly the first general manager of the Eagles, talked to Hara about managing Rakuten. He said, well, you know, the Giants have given up on me, but I haven't given up on the Giants, according to Marty Kunert. So,
right.
I don't think he's going to manage anywhere else. I think he's Hara with the Giants, and he may be back or he may not be back. But you know, I liked so many things that he did. He actually kind of learned how to game manage pretty well. He was pretty bad at the start, and he just got gradually better at that. But team building, he was great, and that's where the Giants really need to push different buttons than the one he's been pushing, because they're worn out.
Yeah, now, just since we're talking about this right now, because I was going to have that in the notes section, but since we're talking about it right now, no, I brought it up too, so I wanted to mention that you mentioned on a show before, I forgot if it was last week or the previous week, that maybe Suguru Egawa might be a potential candidate to replace him, and I heard that as well. But my idea, because it's such a popular trend, is that I can easily see Shinnosuke Abe as a manager. He's half of a coach at the moment anyway. I wouldn't mind seeing him, even if he's going to call it quits in a couple of years, which I could see happening, or maybe even next year. I could see them making him a manager.
I could see that too. The other name that has popped up is Masahiro Kawai.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Who I think is great. I think there's a bunch of people who'd be really good.
I think
the Giants, you know, like the Tigers, the Giants is a, I mean, managing is hard enough as it is without it being the Giants or the Tigers.
Yeah. One more guy I thought, since he's in-house, and I think they always like to go with Giants men or Giants guys, is Masaki Saito.
The pitching coach.
I like his demeanor. I like his approach to talking to the press and everything. So I think, yeah, they're going to have somebody good in-house, I think, available, or some former Giant or something. So it's going to be an interesting watch.
I think it will be a former Giant. I don't think they're... I mean, I remember the time when they were talking about Senichi Hoshino after he left. No, they were.
No. I'm thinking no. say it isn't so.
No, it wouldn't happen this time, but they were speaking of him several years ago. So. Mm.
All right, well, let's get to the PLCS. Now, that was the final stage between the Hawks and the Marines. It was quick and somewhat painless. The Hawks won 3-2 in the first game in 10 innings. Seiichi Uchikawa ended up being the MVP. And by the way, Shingo Kawabata was named the MVP in the final stage for the CLCS. Uchikawa came through with the game-winning hit. The Marines pitched well. They hit okay. They played well. And just like all the other NPB teams, the end result was a loss, you know, when you're playing the Hawks. And it's just like nobody has a chance to win a bullpen game against the Hawks. It's just
that's not quite true, but it's almost true.
Yeah, it just feels like
the odds are stacked against you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they lost that game. And then in the middle game. Okay, Takuya Furuya, he pitched fairly well. He battled, and then he decided to tie his shoelaces again, right?
But that was before the fourth inning. That was before the fifth inning.
The guy I like to call Shoelace because he had a perfect game going, decided to tie his shoes. Was it perfect or just a no-hitter? Maybe it was a no-hitter.
It was perfect.
And decided to tie his shoes, and after that gave up a hit. Anyway, I call him Shoelace. He pitched well, but a bad sixth inning, five runs with two outs and nobody on, and the Hawks
it was close. I mean, it was close. There was one good hit, and there was just barely Yanagi to beat out an infield single. You know, the guy can fly. So, yeah.
So five runs, sixth, and that was it. That was the end of that game, 6-1. Game three. I think SoftBank was again toying with people because who was their opening day starter this season? Do you recall offhand?
Was it not Tadashi Setsu?
It was. Now, did he pitch in this series?
He did not.
He did not, but was he scheduled to pitch probably?
People kept expecting him to pitch,
right. I think game five or six, he was going to pitch. Yeah, so
it went with Shota Takeda and then Rick Vandenhurk and
Kenichi Nakata. He only took three games, so Kenichi Nakata and again, like I said, I think they're toying with people because I don't think Nakata really was on the map, and here he was out here. I think he's got playoff experience and he's a battler and he wins the game. And
Idaho hits his second home run in 2 days, and the Hawks are where we expected the Hawks to be.
Yep, 3-1, and they're into the Japan Series. And you know, I'm looking at this team and I'm saying, look at all the talent they have. And they seem to be able to turn it on when they need it. And I don't mean that it's off at the other times. I mean, they can step it up a level and push it and get, you know, get what needs to be done and get victories. And that's
the thing about the Hawks was, you know, after they wrapped up the championship, they went into a coma for a couple of weeks or a week and a half. And then, you know, they didn't play well. Then they were not playing at all. They went from not playing well to not playing at all to being, okay, let's go.
Right. So they're in their second Japan Series in as many years, and against the Swallows, who wins?
Well, I'm gonna, you know, I think this could easily be a sweep, but I don't think it will be. I think the Swallows are just annoying enough, and that their offense is good enough that the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys and they're motivated and relaxed enough that they can take this to 6 games. The frontline talent, the best players on the team, that's dead even. If you had to pick Yanagita and Yamada and Kawabata and Matsuda, there's not much to say between those four. But the problem is when the farther you get down into the third, fourth, fifth guy on the team, the Hawks slowly start to pull ahead. You see this guy's better. You know, they've got, you know, who's the shortstop? Okay, it's Imamiya. Well, okay, he's not much of a hitter, but you know, the Swallows hitters aren't much either, and Imamiya is pretty good. And, you know, and they've also got the interesting thing of Keizo Kawashima, who was traded to the Hawks last year, and he's been a great fill-in. And the bullpen, I'll tell you, I think they're interesting because I think the Hawks bullpen, the three last guys are better. I love Tony. I love Logan. I love those guys. I love Akiyoshi. They've got more. I think the Hawks, the Swallows have more good guys in the bullpen, but they're not quite as good as the Hawks' best guys.
Yeah.
Although I think Tony's tough enough that, you know, the difference be, and here's the thing, he's tough enough that the difference between him and Dennis Sarfate in over seven games is imperceptible.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but I mean, it's pretty close.
It's not huge. It's pretty Although, close. To be honest, I think Dennis was probably, and you never hear me say this one again, probably was probably the best pitcher in the Pacific League this year.
Yeah. Thank you for that. He was. Not probably. Oh. But,
well,
no, I'm a CL guy. I root for the CL. I'm going to go with the Swallows because I think they really have developed. And they, from the time that obviously I wrote in my blog post that this is the team we all forget. And I looked it up again, so I got it right. I'm going to get it right this time. They had their first 14 games. They allowed three runs or fewer to opponents. And we probably forgot about that they started out the season pitching and playing defense really well.
They play defense all year long.
And yeah, I mean, you know, they have been playing really good defense. And I think they've come together in terms of everybody knows their role. I think the bullpen couldn't be working at a better if it were a car factory, they'd be working at 110% efficiency right now. You know, the lineup probably is very top heavy and very dependent on the triple crown trio. But I think they're going to challenge the Hawks and they're going to put some pressure on them. Some guys are going to come up with some hits that we don't expect. I'll be rooting for them. I don't actually, you know, I'm going to say that I'm rooting for them and I want them to win, but it's going to take everything they have to do it. So
yeah, I think I think they're certainly capable of winning. I think it is a tough. I think it is a tough road. I think you also have to realize that the competition in the Central League and the Pacific League is not balanced.
Not balanced.
That winning 90 games in the Pacific League is like winning 95 in the Central League.
Yeah, maybe even more. All right. Okay. One more note. Tomoaki Kanemoto,
Iron Man,
or Big Brother. Whatever you want to call him, the former Hanshin Tigers slugger, is going to take over as manager. That was announced on Saturday, so good luck with that. And, you know, we talked about it on the show last week because we got a question from our buddy Glenn in Tokyo, and we answered that. And, again, this is something that the owner pointed out in the article that I was reading today, and he said, hey, look, it's his leadership that we're looking for, and I think they're really going to get a good leader in that respect. And I think that the X's and O's or the nuts and bolts part are going to lead to somebody else on the bench. So I'm really interested to see who they're going to have on his coaching staff. I'm not sure that Tom O'Malley is going to be around, but I hope he is.
Well, he was not on the five coaches who were handed their walking papers the other day.
Yeah, but there's still time.
There's still time indeed. But I'm guessing... and my guess is right now that Kanemoto had already agreed, and he said these are five guys that we're not going to need, and I think, you know, O'Malley's going to stay.
Okay. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one is an MP3 from Graveyard Ball.
Who are some interesting names and players that the Lions could be drafting in the upcoming NPB draft? And why do the Yomiuri Giants always get the inside track to their drafted players? We're very curious of that.
All right. So what do you think, Jim?
Well, as far as the draft picks, I haven't really been paying too much attention to it. In fact, I think even the draft is on Thursday, and I'm just like, I got a day off that day. All I can think of, draft, day off, draft, what draft?
Yeah, I'll be at work. I did do one quick search, and I know that they're interested in a kid from Gifu Shogyo High School, a right-handed pitcher named Junpei Takahashi. And one of the team officials was quoted in this story saying he really can gear it up when he needs to. And if they do draft him and they get him, that would give the Lions a trio of Takahashis, Tomomi, Kona,
oh, yes,
and this kid Junpei, which would be really funny because these guys, Takahashi, have all these initials going around on everybody's jerseys.
Yeah, well, I think actually it's the duty of the Hiroshima Carp to get this guy because they got three Takahashis. they need four. They can't let the Lions challenge their dominance.
Right. As far as why the Giants seem to get the players that they're looking for, a lot of times it's because they're the Giants, and in the past, the way they used to run the draft was basically without impunity.
Well,
because you were able to get money to kids to.
Oh, right. Well, you still can. Yeah. You still can, although those are actually against the rules. I mean, it used to be against, as we learned in the whole legal process surrounding stories about under the table.
Payments
to Shinosuke Abe and a few other Giants players that those rules were in fact not rules but guidelines.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget to pay your tip to your waitress.
Exactly, guidelines. So, but those guidelines are now rules, so they're not allowed to pay them signing bonuses, I believe, of more than 150 million yen.
Right, but the thing is the Giants, you know, that's the team of Japan. There's a lot of prestige there. Kids want to play there. So if somebody, you know, says the Giants are interested in you, then you don't say no. So that's that. And that's why the Giants, in my opinion, are able to get the guys they go out for.
I think that's true.
All right, the next one is a message and a question from Glenn in Tokyo. Another MP3.
Hi, John and Jim. Congratulations on your milestone show. I just wanted to ask you a quick question over your time with the pod. What was your best and worst interview that you had with a player? I don't want you to throw anybody under the bus, but if you could just tell us your best and worst interviews and maybe your favorite players over the time, or least favorite players. Thanks again for the great podcast and congratulations.
Okay, I'm going to stick with the best interview. I think I just mentioned Tetsuya Utsumi, and he's been really good. Tuffy Rhodes was great. Jose Fernandez was always great. Dwayne Hosey and Galvez were also fine. Galvez didn't say too much that was controversial. It was all pretty much, I'm good. But anyway, the list, and I want to say that the list is too long of people who were great that I'd hate to slight people because there have been so many, it's hard to pick. As for my worst interview, I can only think of the bad interviews I've done because my questions were stupid or, I couldn't hear or understand maybe the Japanese or something. I guess the person I've had the most difficulty interviewing is Noriichi Kaoki, because he's really hyper. Or he can't be really hyper when he's in uniform. When he's not in uniform, he seems like a normal person. When he's in uniform, he's a little hyper, and he seems to get easily bored, and he can just shut off and just sort of like, So he's given me the most difficulty, but I actually like him, but I've had trouble interviewing him.
All right. Well, for me, I mean, no one's really going to go under the bus, but I've said after each chat on the show, one instance I remember Deontay Heath was pretty bland, and I said the same thing about Aaron Pareda earlier this season about his comments being sanitized. So those guys were, I mean, in terms of on the show. And then I tried to talk to Kenji Jojima once when he was with the Tigers and he came back, and you know, he treated me like a stalker. You know, he's basically yelling across the field, "Get out of here, you know, I don't have time to talk to you." And that was the worst experience I had. But other than those instances, I haven't had too many guys. I know that there's a funny story that I have about this season, and that's that I went out to Yokohama to talk to a Bay Stars player. I was trying to get Moscoso, but he wasn't there. And Jose Lopez was there. And it was really hot in the middle of summer. And the only one person other than Jim who knows about this is Michael Westbay, because I talked to him actually right after it happened. Because I had to go out the next day, and I tried to get tried to do the interview over. But Jose said it was really hot. He wanted to sit under a fan. and we sat in the dugout in Yokohama, and you can only hear my questions in this interview. You can't hear a word he says because the fan was blowing so hard that it just drowned out every word that he was saying. So now you guys know this was this year. So that was the bad experience. The great interviews is everybody. Everybody's really been really fun to talk to. Nigel Morgan, I think, and I played that in that montage.
I'm so jealous there. I was out talking to other people, and I was doing a story on Nigel, and he's sitting there talking. I mean, I did interview him several times, but I wanted to be there too. But you know, if you're going to play, you need a real player, man.
So, he's really fun. He was probably the most fun I've ever had doing an interview, just in terms of, you know, just shooting the breeze. And Jose Fernandez and I, we always got along, so you mentioned him before. Tony Barnett, Luis Cruz, he'll talk to you all day long. Matt Merton, of course, we've had, you know, never runs. There's always as much as interested in you as you are about him. So he asked me as many questions when we're sitting on the bench and talking. So it's been really fun. All right, we got to wrap this thing up. It's getting really long. A special thanks to everybody who's ever really helped us. Simon Weniger in Switzerland, he's the person who did the music. Tony Torres did our very first logo. Hirotada Matsuba, he lives in Nagoya, he did our latest logo from this year. Thanks to our families for allowing us to tape each week. Thanks to all the guests. Thanks to all the listener questions through the years, the comments. Thanks to MPB for having this immensely fascinating brand of baseball that we get to talk about every week. We love it. I love talking to you, Jim, every week. I think I mentioned that earlier this year. You're like a brother.
Always true.
Really enjoy sitting down just doing the show. And you know, we basically do it for free, but I would really actually do it for free. But we do get a little bit of money, so we get a small stipend, so we enjoy it. So thank you very much for listening, everybody.
Is there still time for me to go off on a tangent?
Enjoy your postseason. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.